host, Leah Sarah Pierre, and welcome to my podcast, Pierre Med. I'm a Canadian medical student, human rights, global health, and social justice advocate, as well as just an ordinary human being. As of March 24th, 2021, the Pierre Med podcast is an initiative affiliated with the Pierre Med Foundation, an organization started and inspired by the very beginnings of these conversations. Pierre Med's mission is serving humanity, connecting people, stories, and places. It is a platform that gives a voice to the voiceless, an ear to the helpless, and seeks to empower youth, physicians, and leaders far and wide. On today's episode, I have the pleasure of speaking to Medical Her Story, an award-winning international youth-led not-for-profit organization on a mission to eliminate sexism, shame, and stigma from healthcare experiences. They do this through patient advocacy, storytelling, and medical education, among others. Why is it that female patients are often dismissed, not taken seriously, or often perceived to be throwing a tantrum? What role does gender have in medicine and the healthcare system? How can we as youth address gender health inequities affecting patients? And how can we ensure that they feel heard and empowered to tell their medical her story? If you've answered yes to any of those questions, listen as I dive into discussion with Medical Her Story and how they, as a youth-led organization, are tackling this problem. Tori Ford is the founder and executive director of Medical Her Story. She is an outspoken sexual health advocate whose work has been featured by the United Nations Women, CBC, and the Canadian Women and Children's Health Partnerships. She holds a Bachelor of Arts from McGill University in Gender Studies, a Master's in Philosophy from the University of Cambridge in Health, Medicine and Society, and is currently pursuing her PhD in Primary Health Care at the University of Oxford. Her work on advancing gender health equity has been recognized by the McGill Scarlet Key Award and the University of Cambridge Vice Chancellor Social Impact Award. Kainaz Gandhi is the Director of Operations for Medical Her Story, in which capacity she has helped grow the organization to over 100 volunteers. She manages communications, human resources, logistics, and legal affairs for the organization. Kainaz is a third-year student at McGill, majoring in anatomy and cell biology, and minoring in political science. She is involved in Model United Nations as the current Charge d'Affaires for MacMahon 2022, and works part-time as a healthcare assistant. Kainaz is very passionate about gender inequities and racial disparities, and the ways in which these intersect to impact healthcare experiences. In her spare time, she enjoys baking, reading, and growing her plant family. Ezzy is a second-year student at Western University in the Medical Sciences program and is the director of workshops at Medical Her Story. She's in charge of overseeing the development of workshops across all three portfolios, covering topics such as gender bias in medicine, patient advocacy, and the struggles patients face in healthcare, as well as effective storytelling to reclaim your narrative. She's only been on the team for about 5 months and says that this is definitely one of the most empowering projects she's ever been a part of. As a science student, Ezzy says it's so important to be aware of the inequities in the healthcare system so that we can be the best practitioners in any career we pursue within the realm. Thank you for listening to the Pierre Med podcast. It means the world to have a supportive audience from 25 plus countries and counting. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe to stay updated. Feel free to share it with friends and family members, and more importantly, please follow Medical Her Story. They're on a mission to eliminate stigma, shame, and sexism from healthcare experiences wherever it may be found. For further information, follow us on social media or email us at pyramidfoundation@gmail.com. We here at Pyramid are excited to bring you new content, stories, and conversations, week in and week out. We cannot wait to see our new and familiar faces here, back each episode. Thank you for tuning in. Stay safe, stay healthy. What is Medical Her Story and what does the organization do?
Awesome. Thank you so much for having us here today. So my name's Tori. I'm the founder and executive director of Medical Her Story. Medical Her Story is an international award-winning not-for-profit, and we're on a mission to eliminate sexism, shame, and stigma from health experiences. We advance gender health equity through medical education, patient advocacy, and undoing stigma. And we host a range of events, workshops. We have an online publication, as well as we're really active on social media.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for that explanation, Tori. And so why did you decide to create or select the name of Medical Her Story as opposed to maybe something else? Was there a story behind this?
Yeah, for sure. So Medical Her Story is actually a play on the term of a medical history. So that process where you go to a doctor, it might be intimidating or emotionally draining, and you sort of recount what's going wrong for you, right? For me and my experience, it's often a very emotional experience of talking about the emotional toll of what's going on in my body, how I'm struggling with it, how I'm trying different things and facing different barriers or frustrations. And a medical history essentially reduces all of that into a simple age, name, prognosis. And then, you know, 10 minutes later, you're on your way home. So a medical her story counteracts that traditional way of storytelling in medicine by letting authors reclaim their stories and share it in their own way, in a way that is honest and raw and that respects that these stories are ongoing. They're very much lived and makes room to sort of have those emotions and vulnerabilities come through in stories in ways that they often aren't able to in within clinical encounters.
That's great. I remember coming across this Instagram post on Medical Her Story, which so beautifully clarified the difference between a medical history and a medical her story. And I think this is something very unique that I've seen across the spectrum of medicine. So a great initiative on the part of the organization. But Tori, my next question for you is, what motivated you to take action in starting this award-winning youth-led not-for-profit?
Yeah, so Medical Her Story is really born out of my own lived experience of facing, you know, chronic illness, medical gaslighting, a lot of frustration, a lot of pain, and a lot of feeling alone. I'd been living with chronic yeast infections at the time for a few years and had been to so many different gynecologists, specialists, GPs, and just been really dismissed and often shamed, being told things like, some people get colds, some people get chronic yeast infections, people questioning, you know, my sexual history, performing invasive exams to only if test gets lost, and then finally, you know, gain referrals to specialists, and then finding out that these doctors had so many sexual assault allegations against them. And that moment was where I gave up in healthcare. I gave up because I felt so frustrated and like no one truly cared. And once I stopped engaging with medicine and traditional medical structures, I actually sort of found newfound strength to start telling my story. I started sharing bits and pieces with people in women's health clubs at McGill University and with people I'd been working with within sexual assault spaces. And every time I would share bits and pieces, they would say, this doesn't sound real. This sounds like fiction. You should write it. And so I did. I went on to publish my story in our school newspaper, and it actually went on to make the front page, which was both very cool, but very scary. Luckily, I was not really shamed by my peers at all, which I thought was amazing. Instead, I heard from so many other people that they had really similar experiences of medical dismissal, sexism, shame, and stigma, but they were really afraid to speak up. I knew a platform didn't exist to share these stories, so that's why I created Medical Her Story. And then in the year and a half since, amazing people like Kainaz and Ezzy, who are here with me today, have helped it grow. And now we're over 100 volunteers across 7 different countries. So that's sort of how it started. It started with my story, a single story, and now it's hundreds of stories around the world, which has been extremely powerful and really exciting.
That's amazing, Tori. I commend you for the bravery, for the courage, for being so open and vulnerable to share your story. It comes from a really personal experience, and I think that personal experience is the motivating factor that defines everything that you do every day, which is really inspiring and incredible.
Thank you.
How would you define gender health equity, and how does Medical Her Story advance this important issue?
Yeah, so if my team wants to jump in here, I'm happy as well. I think gender health equity for me means a world where women and gender diverse people are believed, where the conditions that differently and disproportionately affect us are taken seriously, they are well funded, and they're embedded within medical curriculum. And it is a world in which talking about our bodies is not met with shame, stigma, and sexism, but is embraced and celebrated, and where that vulnerability is uplifted, and where patient perspectives are listened to and embedded in all the care that is being given and being received.
Mm-hmm. And so how is the medical education portfolio that you have at Medical Her Story, say, different to maybe the patient advocacy portfolio and the undoing stigma portfolio?
I suppose the main difference between our three portfolios would be their target audiences, which informs really their missions and how they go about achieving our broader goal that Tori has spoken on. So for example, medical education really focuses on creating change within the medical system by educating medical professionals themselves. And I'm sure Ezzy can jump in and speak on this, but one of the ways we do this is through our amazing workshop where we target med students while they're still quite early in their careers. So hopefully as they progress throughout their careers, they'll have more information than, you know, their colleagues or older professionals might. Patient advocacy targets patients themselves, helping women and femme-presenting individuals advocate for themselves in the doctor's office, which is often so important and unfortunately necessary to get, you know, a decent level of healthcare. And then, of course, our Undoing Stigma team focuses mainly on the general public, but also on, I suppose, more specifically on youth. One of the workshops they work on, for example, is a storytelling workshop. And I'm sure Ezzy can jump in now and tell us more about those.
Yeah, exactly. So about the workshops, right? So the medical education one, like Kaina said, right? It's about educating those medical professionals head on about like the parts of their curricula that are hidden. So the inequities, inequalities, everything like that. Patient advocacy, again, it's about letting people know that they're not alone and that there's a bigger system at play when it comes to the healthcare system, which is really scary and can be really confusing. So we just want to empower people like that. And then undoing stigma, again, it's about storytelling, because especially when you've been like passed around the medical system a lot, or if you have an issue that's not really well researched, it can be really scary and really demotivating to pursue that. So with the workshop, we just like empower people and give them tools to reclaim their narrative.
That's amazing. I love how the organization tackles three different population groups from different perspectives, like medical professionals, medical students, with the medical education portfolio, patient advocacy and empowering patients to be able to speak to their doctors openly and with compassion and kindness to have that received back to them. And then the undoing stigma, which really strives to challenge the general public's perception, whether that be in the environment and in mass media. So I really appreciate the objectives that Medical Her Story strives to do. And I think having seen an organization never do this before, and as a youth-led organization, more importantly, that is really fantastic. But my next question, why is storytelling so powerful? Is it simply because it's a form of creative expression?
I think definitely it is a form of creative expression, but I think the common thread through almost all of our stories is really the dismissal that women encounter in the healthcare system, or even in, you know, private healthcare experiences, whether that's how they themselves experience their bodies or how people around them perceive certain situations. And so I think storytelling is very empowering because the people are able to reclaim their own narratives and their own stories and have ownership of that and are empowered to voice their experiences without fear of judgment from peers or whomever else. And I think valuing women's stories and what they have to say is something that doesn't happen very often in healthcare experiences. So in that way, I think it is a very powerful medium for them to kind of reclaim their own narrative.
Mm-hmm. And I could definitely add on that aspect where medical education or the medical curriculum has been so focused on the scientific aspect that there's been kind of a neglect onto the individual human patient in front of them. And so I think with storytelling and empowering patients to tell their stories, you're allowing them to be more open and give them back their autonomy that is often lost in medical education and in the clinic. So I wanted to know from y'all, having been dealing and seeing so many stories, were there any compelling and especially moving stories, besides stories, of course, that you've learned and would like to highlight for maybe listeners listening on the podcast?
Yeah, I like to think that we have almost something for everyone, no matter what it is that you're going through. And I think also just to circle back to what Kynaz was saying, I think storytelling is also so powerful because you get to see yourself reflected. One of the things with my own condition is that there is nothing online. Some conditions are really lucky in that we have awesome support groups and initiatives like endometriosis. That's one community we are super aligned with. And it's so amazing, the storytelling, the community building that happens. But a lot of conditions, whether they are less common or less discussed or get less media attention, they really tend to fall by the wayside. So you feel so alone and you feel like no one else is going through this. So for me, other stories on the website, like Ouchie, which discusses painful sex, which I can relate to, for me is such a powerful story because I can see myself reflected. And it's a fantastic story about a young girl who loses her virginity, experiences pain, and when seeking out medical care about this, is ashamed for her body, is prescribed numbing cream as a first resort without even discussing if lubrication was used, how the experience was, what it meant to her, why was she nervous about what was going on in her body. It was very much sort of an awkward encounter. And I think there's so many other stories about queer experiences, seeking out healthcare, and how, you know, it's often assumed that young women have a boyfriend. And then if they don't, in this case, the woman who was seeking out healthcare was actually sort of denied STI testing. It was assumed, oh, you don't have a boyfriend, you don't need it. Well, of course, she'd been having sexual relations with other women and sort of had moved on to a different period in her life, which I think is very relatable for a lot of young people. As well, there are stories about all sorts of different health conditions, autoimmune diseases, stories about sexual assault, which unfortunately are very common. So I think every single story on the website is extremely powerful in that it is an individual sharing their experience, but in a way that is so open and vulnerable because you might even know these people. You might be friends with these people and you're never going to hear these stories because there's so much shame and stigma. So I truly encourage everyone to read the website because more likely than not, either you'll see yourself reflected or someone in your life is going through these very same issues and you'll be better equipped to care for them as well.
Mm-hmm. And if I may, I'd just like to add that perhaps this is a bit of a cop-out for your original question about one story that spoke to me, but I remember when I first discovered Medical Her Story, I fell down a bit of a spiral where I just kept reading, you know, through the website. And what really stuck with me, which is something that Tori says often, is that, you know, you are the expert of your own lived experience and you're the expert on your body. And that's something that I had never really had validated before. I think when you seek healthcare, especially I think once I like started living on my own, it was very easy to be dismissed. And then for me, it was, you know, immediately I was like, oh, well, that's so like, why would I even ask that? Of course, the doctor knows, you know, like, how could I presume to know more? And if the doctor's saying nothing's wrong, then like, obviously nothing's wrong. But that's not the case. And I think women, seeing other women's stories about how they had to advocate for themselves and kind of fight through their own healthcare experiences was really so validating, just in general and across the board. So I completely agree. Everyone should have a read on the website.
Most definitely. And I really appreciate that Medical Her Story for especially healthcare providers really opens up this new lens that perhaps they've never ever thought of before, and really confronts the uncomfortable, the unspoken, and that as a medium for reflection, I think is really important in today's world. But what about stigma? What are some common stereotypes that Medical Her Story seeks to challenge?
I can jump in here. So a lot of the stereotypes that we see, I think, are both gendered, but often also tied in with race as well. We know that women are often stereotyped as being hysterical or overly emotional, that they're dramatic and exaggerate their pain. This is why in studies where a man and a woman will present with the exact same symptoms, we know that women are more likely to be prescribed with antidepressants, while men are more likely to get painkillers. I think, Ezzy, if you want to maybe comment on this as well, but there are so many different stereotypes in the system for sure.
Yeah, and another thing I was going to point out is how they always want to like bring these stereotypes too into their diagnosis. So exactly what Tori said, how they choose antidepressants for women and then painkillers for men. And you can even see it in like some of the diagnoses. Like another one that we always talk about is hysteria, where they always start making like unbased claims from there too, saying, oh, if a woman loses her uterus, then that's hysteria or something like that. And even when they make stereotypes about endometriosis as well, you know, they bring in classism, racism. That's another big one. And I feel like, again, like the main stereotype that we're trying to stop at Medical Her Story is that the differences between women and men is not that like one sex or one gender is weaker than the other, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just to touch on Ezzy's point, our listeners might not know, but the classifications for endometriosis historically and even sometimes today is a thin white woman who is what they call a professional woman's disease. So she's high strung. And this is so odd that this has actually been in sort of official classifications. And it means that Black women often are never diagnosed and that physicians might actually believe that this condition, which affects, I believe, 1 in 10 people with vaginas, can only affect a certain type of woman. And that obviously links back to, as you were saying, discourses of hysteria, which also were very racialized and gendered as well. And yeah, even though stereotypes, you know, we can think, oh, like, do people really believe those? Even if you hear them and you're like, okay, that's ridiculous. There's also so much unconscious bias where you might not even realize that if you don't test a patient for a certain disorder or you just discount it, where is that actually coming from?
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. You guys have raised such important points with just stereotypes, especially that exist in the clinical sphere. But how is the work produced by the organization inclusive and maybe not too offensive for maybe more conservative individuals?
Oh, I can say in here. I feel like, again, like with the stories, like when you read them, right, you're reading somebody's like lived experience. And like, it's just all about, you know, being a human, seeing the humanity and everything. Because I don't really think you can read those and dismiss someone or ridicule them for anything, right? You want to sympathize with humans. Mm-hmm. That's me personally.
Definitely. And I'd like to add that although our work definitely focuses on, you know, the fact of the matter is that medicine or science isn't sterile, impersonal, and objective as we'd like to believe. There are already biases within science that impact research, that then impacts healthcare, that impacts formulas for diagnosis and all of that. So definitely try to kind of flip the script in terms of that and think, okay, well, if science isn't objective, then how can we bring that personal aspect, but help it serve us and help eliminate the negative stereotypes or biases that are already present. So definitely personal lived experience is core to everything we do. But in addition, I think that what's really important, and you can see this in our social media and in our workshops and our publications and newsletters, is that we make sure that everything we do is well researched. It's, you know, based in fact, and we make sure that when we're addressing topics, for example, targeted at doctors, we're looking at statistics. Well, you know, if 83% of chronic illness is presents in women or people who identify as women, then why is the funding so disproportionate to that? And I think coming with those statistics of women's health being underfunded, women not being diagnosed despite, you know, a high prevalence of a certain disease in populations, is really important in making sure that people can appreciate that everything we do is, you know, well-founded, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course.
Yeah, and I think our work definitely strives to be inclusive, and sort of, you know, like I said before, try and get stories that a wide population can relate to. And I think that this issue is so universal and sort of crosses so many different divides that it's really important that everyone is engaging in this topic. So while I think today we're speaking mainly from a patient perspective, we definitely have so many amazing healthcare workers on our team as well, really working together to create collaborative care. You know, gender bias in medicine is something that nobody wants. We would all like to eliminate it. Mm-hmm. And while Kainaz is very right in saying that, you know, our approach, we try to be as objective as possible in sort of presenting the direness of the situation, where, you know, a woman is 7 times more likely to be dismissed in the middle of having a heart attack. These are things that you can't really contest, but also upholding that lived experience is just as valuable as statistics or any academic degree, and really centering that in our work, not only in the stories we tell, but using those stories, as Ezzy does so brilliantly in our workshops, when educating professionals and patients, also embedding lived experience in all of our events. So making sure that we have, you know, always people on the panel who have those experiences, and just recognizing that everyone has a story regardless of your background, and that these issues are big issues. So they really require everyone involved, which is why we try to speak to so many, you know, like Kaina said, our 3 different target audiences, so we can just get everyone involved in fixing it.
That's amazing, Tori and Ezzy and Kainaz. Thank you so much for sharing that. But challenging our society's stigmatizing beliefs and ending the silence has never been easy. And Medical Her Story takes a task on this every single day and strives to do this. So have there been any hurdles or obstacles or maybe haters that have come along the way?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's endless work that has to be done. And of course, we encounter different hurdles. I think we've been very fortunate to create such a warm, welcoming, and sort of engaged audience that really wants to learn and grow with us. So I don't think we have too many haters, or at least not vocal ones. Maybe Kainaz or Ezzy have encountered some, but I'd say the project has been really well received. And I think that is because we've been so careful about the way we approach these topics. We've been so thoughtful about it. We've really spent time thinking about the problems and the solutions we want to be presenting, in a way that, you know, yes, we are talking about extremely taboo topics, and we're doing it in ways that are bold and outspoken and unapologetic, but also doing it in a way that, you know, isn't trying to alienate anyone and trying to really bring people in to the movement as well.
Mm-hmm. And so why has there been this lack of awareness among healthcare professionals about these biases? And why does stigma continue to perpetuate in the healthcare system?
I think the main reason really is just, as we were discussing before, a lack of funding for main issues that we address. And I think that really impacts education. And frankly, what we've seen is that medical professionals in their education, I don't know, in their educational careers, I suppose, at no point are they really confronted with this information. It's not in their curriculums, it's not in their textbooks. And I think this historical dismissal of, you know, marginalized narratives is what has contributed to this lack of awareness. So what we do is try to bring that into their education systems, you know, address med students as they're still learning, and hopefully, you know, working towards a space where all of this information is more present in schools and in college and in textbooks. And I think that's how we go about making sure that these issues become more mainstream, for lack of a better term.
And so then how do we push for this greater gender equality in healthcare and for compassionate care in other aspects of society beyond just, say, medicine?
I would personally say it's all about having diverse voices in the rooms, right, where the change is made. So again, like, it doesn't have to be medicine. It can be any part of society where you have those overarching, really influential voices, right, just make them different from yours. And naturally, stigma, I feel like, gets eased like that when you start to see, oh, that's not what I thought that issue was. And somebody would be like, no, in reality, it's so-and-so, so.
And definitely, I think our team is already doing such amazing work by, you know, learning about gender bias in medicine and helping us educate others, but then also bringing it back into their own practices. So on our team, we have such diverse individuals, not only in terms of their backgrounds and experiences, but also in terms of what they're studying and what they do as careers. So we have amazing people working in policy, who work in pharmacies, who work, you know, as nurses and public health, who then take this information and in turn, you know, go on to educate others in their communities, which is something that we're really proud of to do. So I think one of the main things is, you know, continuing to educate yourself, being curious, learning more. And then once you become aware of these issues, you know, bringing it back to the other people so you can continue the movement that way as well.
And I love this play where Medical Horror Story is really empowering individuals and those that are coming on to serve on the executive team, on the volunteer organization team, really brings it back and spreads this message that it's okay to share your story and that vulnerability is critical to changing the landscape of the way our society and healthcare system works. But how should healthcare professionals or maybe those listening in question their own gender biases and how can they improve their medical interactions with patients?
They can attend our workshop. I mean, our workshop goes into this in depth. You can book it on our website. We're always more than happy to share that information. But I think the key messages, if I can do justice in a quick summary, is, you know, believing patients, educating yourself about historical biases and where they come from, seeking out different learning opportunities about conditions, you know, like common sexual and reproductive health conditions that are maybe discussed during one class, maybe a few slides or as is a one-off case study, so that you're better prepared to care for your patients. And we offer a lot of great trauma-informed tips as well on our Instagram pages, things that really aren't taught unless you seek them out. And I think it's really being open to collaborative care and engaging patients. We know that medical encounters can be spaces that are really stripping of agency, as we've touched on. So simple things like allowing patients to self-swab for STI testing or insert their own speculum during an exam, really seeing how you can put power back in the patient's hand and talking to them about what they think's going wrong in their body, what they think would be an appropriate solution. And when you're asking about, you know, how are they doing, taking into account that this might be, you know, your patient's fourth, fifth time seeking out help for the same issue, or they might really be on the brink of just giving up, and sort of taking that into consideration that we know within medicine, these systems are stretched thin. And we're not saying that, you know, being understaffed or overworked aren't issues, but we are saying that those issues are going to be exacerbated for people that are of gender minorities, of racial minorities, who are disabled, who are low income and otherwise marginalized. So really trying to spend that extra time where you can and making room for that vulnerability and that emotion in your diagnosis, instead of just trying to, you know, pinpoint the one thing that, you know, is going wrong, trying to see it a bit more holistically and how you can help that patient. And just being mindful of what you say. A lot of the stories, you can read the one-off comments from doctors that I'm sure I've never once thought about that comment again. My own physician who said, some people get colds, some people get chronic yeast infections, probably thought they were being funny. It wasn't funny to me. It's still not funny. It is extremely condescending and dismissive. And there's so many other one-off comments like that on our website. So I think it's really important to, you know, lead with empathy, lead with compassion, and really do your best to hear patients. And also, you know the limits of healthcare. They're not made for long-term health conditions, unfortunately. And that's why organizations like ours and amazing other support groups have to step up and do that work. So educate yourself on those resources and give your patients that space that they truly all deserve.
I think definitely, and I think it can be a bit intimidating sometimes, even for, you know, a medical professional to, once they start grasping kind of the enormity of the issue, to figure out how to approach something like this and where to start. And of course, our website is a great place to start. But also, I think a really simple thing that I think can go a very long way is just when you, you know, reach a conclusion or have an assumption or make a decision, just pausing for a few seconds and asking yourself, you know, why do I think like that? Like, what made me reach this conclusion? And I think that can lead to a lot of discoveries about flaws in your own education, flaws in your own belief system. And I think this applies kind of across the board, not just to medical professionals. And I found myself doing it in my own, you know, navigating my own healthcare experiences of, well, why do I think that? And I think that's really powerful as well for doctors or healthcare professionals to just start with that question of, well, what makes me think that way?
Yes, beautifully put, both of you, Tori and Kenaz, how you so went into the aspects that medical professionals, medical students need to do. And I think it comes from this basis of knowing that medical education, becoming a provider, becoming a health professional, is an ongoing learning experience. And you have to continuously reevaluate your position, your biases, your unconscious bias, and to have that within a narrative and a frame of view when interacting with the person before you, before seeing that person as a patient, I think is of critical importance in order to better serve and foster the health equity, gender equity in medicine. But the PMed podcast motto statement is serving humanity. So my question is, how, in your opinion, is Medical Her Story serving humanity?
I can drop something in here. So to me, Medical Her Story is definitely serving humanity because it's all about amplifying those voices that have been belittled, that have been dismissed, right? Like the ones that are too afraid to speak up. So again, we can talk about the storytelling that we empower people to do, the process that we walk people who are interested in telling their stories. Like, we have a process to guide and walk through them so it's told correctly and it's told in their voice. So that's one way that we serve humanity.
Yeah, I think we do it every day in this work. And while this work can be very difficult or heavy, we get to see every single day the impact of it, which is amazing. I think, you know, society at large, when you lock away certain conversations and you deem them as inappropriate or unladylike, it becomes really hard to ever bring them up. And what we find happens then is that you suffer in silence and you really are just assuming that you're alone and everyone else is in perfect health and getting care that they deserve, and that you're the weird one and it's an isolated incident, or maybe you're overreacting. You know, we can often gaslight ourselves, as kind of as has been touching on. So I think that can become easily internalized, and a lot of that frustration can be turned inwards, that patients go on to blame themselves. And then you get mad at your body for not being able to live up to these sort of normal, quote unquote, or healthy standards. So I think we're definitely serving humanity in starting by breaking down those barriers to having these conversations, by normalizing and celebrating these conversations, and really, you know, letting patients and people navigating healthcare that they're not alone, by letting healthcare professionals know how they can be allies and better support patients and become better providers, and also just on the public level of how we can actually change the narrative and undo taboos and just, you know, improve society all around by really focusing on this one area that is really encompassing of so many different layers of oppression and discrimination that I'm so proud that we get to work on and see the impact when, you know, we get to hear from medical students that this workshop was the first time they'd even considered how gender was playing a role in their potential biases, and now they're dedicated to do better. When we get to hear from those people that we help share their stories, that it's their first time speaking publicly about their STI diagnosis, or something that they've been going through and keeping silent about, and that they feel so much lighter and empowered and grateful to have a space that was safe to share these stories. Or also from all the amazing individuals who follow us on social media or attend our events and then relay how it's really opened their eyes and are thankful that we're having these difficult conversations. So yeah, I think that's definitely what we're doing, and we're really happy to continue doing it day in and day out.
That's incredible, Tori, how wonderfully you've put into how you're actually serving humanity, how the organization Medical Her Story is serving humanity. And I strongly believe that by giving it back to the patients, by providing them with the resources and tools to uplift them and to empower them to speak on a platform that shows that there's others around them that are open, is really powerful. But in your opinion, why have these communities, these marginalized and unheard voices within the medical curriculum, why have they been subject to, say, a multitude of systems of oppression and injustice?
Yeah, I think that's a loaded question. I think it starts historically that systems of healthcare were not built for everyone. You know, we've seen that historically. We've seen that as a fellow medical historian myself, that unfortunately, medical spaces have long been sites of violence for Black, Indigenous, and marginalized populations. We've seen that with coerced sterilization. We've seen that with medical experimentation. We've seen that with the birth of modern gynecology being done on enslaved Black women. These are not things that go away. These are things that become embedded and rooted in this care. And actually, we can still see the present day effects in sort of when we look at Black maternal mortality rates or Indigenous rates of Indigenous abuse within hospitals in Canada. These are still very much issues today. So I think that's where they sort of stem from. And then they just become perpetuated. Stereotypes often don't get questioned enough. We just assume them. You know, we've heard ridiculous statistics about how many medical students still believe that Black people have thicker skin, that Black women can endure more pain. And this continues to this day, which is why it's so important to get in these classrooms, to get in there early and to be doing this really important work. Because if you don't, these systems are not going to disappear on their own.
Mm-hmm. And speaking about the messy, leaky, and in pain, as Tori mentioned, have been for the longest time reserved for the closeted discussions between patients and doctors. So why is it of utmost importance that the public be aware of these stories?
Well, I think the first step in anyone's healthcare experience really is recognizing that you require healthcare and then going about trying to gain access to it. And so I think stigmas within, you know, society, whether that be what we hold ourselves or what we fear like receiving from those around us, really prevents women from even getting to that first step of recognizing that something's wrong and recognizing that you need help and then reaching out for that help. So, you know, addressing that is so important. And I think especially culturally, I'm Indian. So culturally, you know, there aren't really any discussions especially in public spaces about sexual health or like women's sexual health particularly. And that's starting now. And I think our organization is, you know, one of the wonderful groups that is playing a big role in that. And I think that that's extremely important in achieving gender health equity.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like another important reason why these stories should be discussed too, right? It helps patients also realize when doctors made that one-off condescending comment, like Tori says, right? Because to you, you could just be like, oh, okay. And then when you start to tell to people, people realize that that comment wasn't right. And maybe there's an issue with abuse or pattern with that doctor, right? So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what effect do silence have on medical conditions due to the fear of being ignored or shame? I found it very powerful when Tori put that this lost hope leads to lost access of lost lives. So what impact do you think that fear of being ignored or silence has on, say, individuals and patients coming to the medical clinic?
I mean, it's just what you said, which is that it does lead to, unfortunately, you know, disproportionate loss of life. And I think more broadly, it also leads to a perpetuation of these stereotypes, of these gaps in education and in healthcare, because we aren't talking about it. And if we aren't talking about it, then how are we going to do anything about it? You know, a lot of people, unfortunately, whether healthcare providers themselves or not, simply aren't aware of these issues. And I think that's something that we try to do, is really raise awareness, whether that be through our social media, or our workshops or our events, or whatever else. And I think that that is so crucial in addressing the problem at large.
And we've seen too on the website of stories where if patients had stopped advocating for themselves after the first time they were sent home, they might not be alive today. One of our early members, Melissa, has a beautiful 3-part story on our website about her ovarian cancer diagnosis, how she sought out medical care multiple times to be dismissed as period cramps or constipation, that she was young, that she was fine. And it was actually her own self-advocacy and actually her mother's self-advocacy that led to her diagnosis, to her getting her ovary removed, to going through chemotherapy, to then navigating all the layers that come with that diagnosis. And that's just one case that is very powerful of how important self-advocacy is and how it's so important to not ignore your body, to really try your best to not gaslight yourself and understand that you deserve quality and compassionate care, but also having to accept the reality that that means a lot of work. Unfortunately, half the battle with healthcare is finding a provider who's going to care and listen to you. And we know that within Canada, issues of doctor shortages are real, and all across the world where healthcare systems aren't even as equipped as ours is really difficult. So we know the negative consequences of this, and on a broader scale, that you can only sort of take so much before you probably give up on caring for yourself. And that has serious, serious consequences. And we know that that also disproportionately affects women who've been sort of conditioned to put others above themselves, and to not always self-advocate because they fear being seen as bossy or bitchy or otherwise dismissed. So I think it's so, so important. There's so many different layers to these issues. And I mean, even if we can start to undo one, it's going to make such a difference.
Very well said, Tori. And so why is there this neglect in the healthcare system? Do we believe that maybe it's overburdened, or is there a lost sense of humanity that is now prevalent in healthcare providers and, say, physicians?
I guess, like, honestly, it'll probably change with, like, different regions, right? Like, different, like, governments, everything like that. But from what I can kind of see, it's always been, like, a loss of humanity, in my opinion, more than overburdened. Because I always feel like there's always more to do, right? Like, there's always more out there for patients who need more support. Like, again, like Tori said, the healthcare system isn't designed for those who need, like, long-term, like, who have long-term problems. Well, so there's always more to do, right? There's always online forums that people can join, support groups. And I just feel like it's also kind of on the physician or any of the primary care practitioners to help alleviate that burden as best they can, right? So just a little bit of research, just a quick Google search, right, that night after seeing the patient can go a long way.
Mm-hmm. And so how can we ensure a community and that future healthcare professionals foster more inclusive, equitable, and safe spaces for patients, and that they essentially, at the bottom, see each patient as a human being?
I can, like, say one thing that, like, I'm thinking. So I think something that's really important for physicians, again, just reading the room, you know, recognizing the power dynamic that they have with their patient, right? So again, like we keep talking about these comments, but, like, just those little times that they think they're being funny and they say something that's, like, really condescending or really dismissive, like, just check that bias, right? Like, again, like, there'll always be a power dynamic between doctors and patients, which is all right, but what's wrong is when people weaponize that or abuse that dynamic, right, to now start to shame the patient. So when you watch those biases, watch little remarks you often make, that can go a long way as well.
Mm-hmm. And I also think that You know, like Corey mentioned before, we have a lot of med students, a lot of healthcare professionals in our organization. So I think the work is starting. There's obviously still much to accomplish, but I think one thing that's important is really for institutions to recognize their responsibility to not only, you know, the general public patients, but also to the medical professionals they educate and they employ, and that they have a responsibility to seek out, you know, workshops or classes or lecturers who do have this necessary approach to healthcare. So I think that's definitely an important step in kind of working towards undoing all of this within the system.
I think also trying to change sort of the narrative that we have around physicians, which I think is equally damaging for patients and providers, that, you know, yes, medicine, people in medicine can do incredible things, but I think often putting them on such a pedestal that they know everything, that they are heroes, that they can do no wrong, is so damaging on both ends. It makes it so it's really hard for health professionals to admit when they don't know, to admit that they can't help you, or to also put sort of some of that ego aside and refer you to a specialist or someone else who might be able to help you more. I think we've seen that in a lot of stories as well. And I think recognizing that providers are human, they are going to make mistakes, they're going to hold bias, they are not going to sort of be the be all and end all, that they are just going to cure you, and that it's going to take this collaborative care model, which we keep touching on, right? That patients can play an active role in medical encounters, and that physicians are prepared to do that, educated to do that, and equipped to do that, both in times of, you know, time and resources and education, but also, you know, within your own practice, you do have a lot of control of how you can talk to people and treat people. So I think it exists on multiple levels, but I think if we could just bring, you know, like your podcast trying to do more humanity to both sides, I think that would go a long way.
But if there is anything or anyone wanting to share a story and they're too afraid, what would you say to them?
Yeah, I would say there's no rush. You also can write your story and never publish it. This is something we cover in our amazing storytelling workshops on how to reclaim your narrative, which is about, you know, knowing when you're ready. I don't think this is a process you should rush, but I think once you are ready to share your story, it can be so amazing. And if you do feel like you're there or would like to get there, definitely reach out and we can help you, whether you do want to share it publicly or not. And in the workshop, we detail, you know, how to approach really heavy topics of sexism and racism, where to start in your story. You know, when you're living your story or you've lived it for many years, it can be hard to find that beginning. So giving tips and advice on how to do that, how to sit with some of those heavy parts that might have trauma tied to them or might be really painful to talk about and that you're not sure if you want to share. I would say to all the listeners that you can share as much or as little of your story as you want. There's definitely part of my own story that I've left out or that I've chosen to share, you know, a year later. You don't have to be, you know, you can choose how vulnerable you want to be essentially. And our team is very trauma informed. We're very experienced and skilled at helping walk you through that process. And we've also, everyone on our editorial board has shared their own story, like Melissa and Ashley. So we are there to help guide you through. So if you are scared, I would say that your story is important. It matters. It deserves to be told, and that we are here to support you.
Beautiful. And so what are some of the accomplishments of Medical Horror Story, and what are some successful fundraisers, if any at all?
We've hit some amazing, amazing milestones. We've reached over 2,000 people with our events. We've held about 17 online, everything from feminist health comedy nights to movie screenings, panel discussions, storytelling sessions. We have an annual feminist health research conference coming up. So those have been some huge, huge accomplishments for our team. I'll let you speak about workshops after, but we've also reached thousands of individuals through our social media, which has been extremely rewarding, and we've shared dozens of health conditions and have even more to come in the months coming up. So we've been really fortunate to do that, and also being awarded some amazing accolades, including the McGill Scarlet Key Award and the University of Cambridge's Vice Chancellor's Social Impact Award, which really went on to show that, you know, we're ready to have these conversations, and even institutions that have long been more conservative or traditional are ready to have these conversations, and they're ready for change. So that's been extremely rewarding. And we've also done some recent crowdfunding where our amazing support team and volunteers and community reached our target within 3 hours, and we are about to hit double that. So it's been really amazing to see everyone's support, and we encourage you to keep doing that, whether that is through donating, joining our volunteer team, liking us on social media, all of that. But yeah, Izzy, if you want to talk about our success with the workshops and where we've presented, that'd be great.
Yeah, so with the workshops, again, I think we've gone to premiere them, all three of them. Actually, no, I'm misspeaking. Patient advocacy is actually like premiering outside of the organization for the first time today, which is really exciting, at UCLA. The medical education workshop has been presented to many universities, I think two continents now. We've presented in front of Karolinska, the University of Western, University of Ottawa. I think I might be forgetting one. I think I'm missing one.
You've done Glasgow.
Oh, Glasgow, yes.
Cambridge. So it's been to Sweden, England, Scotland, and Canada, which has been really amazing.
And then Undoing Stigma also presented their workshop for the first time this year in March with Sex and Self and the Powers Group at U of T, which was really exciting.
That's incredible. So happy to hear of where Medical Horror Story is taking the education and the work that they're doing beyond our borders in Canada. That is really phenomenal. And I commend the entire team for the success of this. But what are some future goals? What's next for Medical Horror Story? And what are some upcoming plans? And lastly, to finish it off, where can listeners follow Medical Horror Story and how can they get involved?
I'll say definitely social media is one place to follow. I'm not sure if we're still recruiting at this time. I think Tori could talk about that. We just recruited a bunch of volunteers. Definitely social media, the Instagram page at Medical Horror Story is like really, really informative. You can also book workshops on the website, and yeah.
Kinda, okay. Do you want to talk about future directions, or should I?
I guess our future is very promising, if I may say so myself. We're looking to expand and make sure that our reach grows, which is so important to our mission in general. It's really impacting as many individuals as possible. So looking to hit 5K followers on Insta soon, looking to expand into more countries, more universities as we continue to grow. And then Tori, I'll let you focus on specifics.
Sure. So Medical Horror Story is growing each and every day. Like I said, our team is over 100 volunteers, which is so amazing and humbling. We're hoping to establish university chapters across the world in the coming year. And we're really excited. We have some really cool partnerships coming up with like the International Federation of Medical Students. We're going to be leading a survey on gender health inequity with their over 1 million medical students, which we are so excited for. We've had the pleasure of working with UN Women and continue to do work there. And we're really happy to have inspired so many other movements and initiatives that have followed in our footsteps now that we've laid this amazing groundwork. And we're really excited to keep leading the charge of this global movement, inspiring people to share their stories, and ultimately eliminating sexism, shame, and stigma from all health experiences.
That's incredible. I'm really excited to see these events, these activities, and future collaborations up and coming. I just want to take the time to thank you all, Tori, Izzy, and Kinaz, for coming onto the PureMed platform, for sharing your stories, for sharing insight about Medical Horror Story, of doing the incredible work that you do each and every day to bring back the humanity that is often lost in medical education, in the clinic rooms, and in empowering patients to be vulnerable, to speak and uplift and essentially serve as an inspiration for maybe others who are afraid to share their own stories.
Thank you so much. It was great to be here.